Welcome, everyone. My name is Marina Pullen, and I'm the host of today's podcast series, What Would You Do Differently? A podcast that asks leaders with 10 years or plus in the workforce around an event or a moment in their careers where, given the chance to look back and reflect, they can start to think of, oh, what would have I done differently? The purpose of the podcast is to offer real life stories from the accomplished leaders, including Michael here, and to
An
hopefully give
exception.
you hopefully give you some validation when you make mistakes, or maybe even help you prevent maybe some career limiting or hiccups along the way. So without any further ado, our brave, amazing interviewees who are coming along. This is Michael Toms from, am I allowed to say where you're from? You're just Michael, like, sure. We'll just say
You can say
Michael.
where. Okay.
You know what? People are going to Google that after we say weren't, you know, it's a
It's pretty
secret. It's a
discoverable.
secret rule. It's quite discoverable, yes. And now Michael is kindly going to take us through a story, which interestingly, you've heard of the phrase, you know, the power of yes. Michael's going to tell you about the power of no and just tell us a bit about his experience with the imposter syndrome and the differences of when it can happen to your life when you say no a bit more. So, over to you, Michael. Tell us about your story.
Thank you, Marina. Well, I'm going back to the dim dark past. So, and I guess that's where most stories begin. So, quite some time ago now, I was working in a software company. I was the development manager, R&D manager, and it was enterprise software, so business software. Spent a lot of my time talking to manufacturers and miners and facilities people and all sorts. Working on product development for my development team, or working with analysts, testers, and so forth to develop features, and also dealing with the occasional adrenaline rush of sales guys selling features that didn't actually exist in the product quite yet. It's always a nice spike
A spicy,
in workload.
spicy career moment, yeah.
So, and I was enjoying it. I was enjoying it. I was in my comfort zone, I suppose. The main challenge at the time was the desire from the owners to outsource pretty much my entire team, and I spent an awful lot of my time battling that, largely because I think we were doing it probably because others were, rather than because it suited our own strategy. But regardless of that, I was finding myself just in lots of discussions about why we shouldn't be doing this thing, rather than more purposeful items. And after a while, that became quite wearing. And I got one of those phone calls you get at different points in your career of someone asking if you want to come and have a coffee. So had a coffee. Coffee turns into opportunity. Without probably too much thought about necessarily what I was going to, I had a reasonable idea, but I suppose I had it more in my head as to what I was leaving rather than what I was heading to. So I said yes. And what I was entering into was at a bank. I was going to be lead architect on a certain project. But then within the space of all of a week or two of being there, that project was put on hold. There was a further discussion along the lines of, well, you're here now, you don't have too much to do, how about you do this thing instead, which was completely foreign in terms of its subject matter. It was again an architecture role, but it was quite foreign to me. But it had a title, it was a lead architect role ultimately, and so I said yes to that. And the way things developed and developed quite rapidly was that the project became the number one priority in the organization. We were running faster than maybe we could handle. Quickly stood up a team, very quickly stood up a team. It became sort of all too obvious to me that I was the least experienced member of that team. Albeit the leader of it. So it created an environment where I had it was a team of very good people, but I suppose all I could see at that point was the fact they had more experience than me. So I was sitting there typically in front of business stakeholders representing design or representing architecture. Meanwhile, in the background, I had my team, and you can insert your own joke about a group of architects, but safe to say they generally don't agree on too much. So I was spending most of my days with what grew into a team of getting close to 10 architects of various flavours, telling me everything that was wrong with the world and why couldn't we have this thing? Why weren't we doing this thing? So my days were largely spent in meetings of that sort of tone of conversation, explaining or discussing why things weren't working, why we didn't have a blueprint, why we didn't have why we didn't have program documentation, why we didn't have this, that, and the other, and it was all good points. But there was all the energy was being exhausted on discussing what was going wrong, rather than having any capacity or any time, let alone even the headspace to think about what to do or develop the things that were needed. So my days for a fairly horrible period were spent in meetings all day, and then in the evenings trying to get some work done, trying to fall asleep, not really achieving that, and then rinse and repeat for sort of weeks to a month at a time, and quickly hitting that point of exhaustion. So over time, it did start to resolve itself, partly by design, but partly through the simple passage of time, that these things by evolution did start to get better. But the challenge through all of it was really maintaining, I suppose, sanity through it in part, maintaining that purpose and that sense of outcome, because you or I felt that sense of obligation to the organisation that I'd come to the team that I was working with, to the project that I was working to stakeholders, you name it. It was that broader sense of obligation, and really my primary sort of driver was the fact that I felt I was letting people down by the situation I'd placed myself in, by saying yes to these things when the internal narrative was, you can't do this. So through all of that, it was incredibly challenging, and I'll now confidently say with 10, 15 years of perspective upon it, that it was definitely the worst period in my working career. It's put many other things into perspective since. So I'm not sort of recommending a period of trauma of that sort, but it does quite often console me now in that it's not as bad as that time when. But I'm very glad it's in the very glad it's in the rear mirror. And look, over time, as I say, it resolved itself. We had good people coming in. It settled. We matured as a team. We achieved some outcomes, not all of the ones we originally set out to. But it was very challenging in the moment, to the point where there were those questions that you ask yourself of, why am I doing this in the first place? Not just the role, but almost working in general.
What's it all for? I've known you for quite a while, and you've always been quite reflective. When you look back on that, and I acknowledge that you're saying, it was a good bookend of saying it's not as bad as that. So there's some value in it. But what would you have done differently?
Well, I think it's taking the advice which I now happily give others, which is always when taking a role, be very conscious what you're going to, not what you're. Don't be running away from things. So don't take a role because you're unhappy where you are. It needs to be at a certain level of unhappiness to make you run away. And I completely understand that there's a definite level of privilege in being able to say that you have that level of choice available to you, because not everyone is in that position where you can deliberate a bit on opportunity. But typically, I would say in the types of careers, I suppose, that we're in, be conscious about what you're going to. But not all opportunities are equal either. So that mentality that's drummed into you for a good part of your career is every opportunity is a good opportunity, or as quite a few people said, actually, when I was going through this period, when I was struggling and trying to have that conversation, the first response was typically, "This will look good on your resume," or "This will be good experience," which, yes, that is true, but it's not particularly helpful in that moment in time. So I think that's where that ability to say no to things, because you're not reacting necessarily, or you're thinking about optionality. It's
Like the
it's rare that there's a
emotional,
yeah it's rare that there's only a single option on the table or a single opportunity on the table,
for
and
sure.
you might feel in the moment that another one's not going to come along, but the truth is that typically they do. So in part, it's very much, yes, that idea of being considerate, being deliberate about what you're responding to, and that works on any number of levels. It's not just career choices, it's personal choices, it's decisions in the moment too, that things aren't binary by any stretch. There's degrees of choice within them. But then the other part of it, the imposter part, which has been, well, it's still with me now. It's been with me throughout. But what I've got better at over the years is reminding myself, or thinking about why I am there, not why I shouldn't be there. So, what the bit that I sort of left out earlier deliberately was that some of the people coming into the project that I was describing, that's the narrative they started telling me, is you are here because we believe in you, because we know you can do this, which I wasn't certainly wasn't telling myself. And given the early stages where no one really had a moment to think, there wasn't really any sort of discussion around why various are people are in there. But there were a few moments along the way where I had the opportunity to have those conversations, that yes, the others might be more experienced in this nature, but you're here because you can knit them together, because the stakeholders want to talk to you. That's what you bring to it, even if your technical experience isn't maybe as deep or as long as some of the others that are in the room. So,
If sorry, can I just ask a question? Like if
sure.
I do have the
I'm
red
afraid to
button
stop you
here,
now.
sorry. If you, I don't know if you've had any reflection on if you hadn't taken that job and you hadn't put yourself through that trauma, have you had any ideas of at that point in your career how your career trajectory would have changed? Because that sort of elevated you up that and gave you a lot of confidence,
Yeah,
but it,
so it
not
was sort
without
of the
some chunks.
no, it was the accelerated program, I guess. And I've thought about it in the sense that the software company that I worked for example, it was quite small. Adelaide was just the development office, so it was near enough invisible locally, but I spent most of my time in Sydney. So I guess in some respects, I was the youngest person in the senior management team there already. But the part that plays on my mind more is that this whole outsourcing discussion that I referenced earlier, all I'd really achieved was blocking it up until the point I left. Within a week of me leaving, that all just kicked off. And the team that I felt passionately about being important and that should have remained local, the outsourcing began. So I suppose the part that I've reflected on in some ways is maybe the more value-based thing to have done perhaps would have been to have stuck around and make sure that was done on terms that I thought were appropriate, without sounding too grandiose about it all. But
No, I think
when
that's sometimes you have to accept the inevitable or something's going to go, and then you have to, you use your skills to navigate it the best way you can, you know. Hey,
Yeah.
can I ask another question? Because I think you're very smart, so.
If you're going to bust me out, sure.
Okay. You know the imposter syndrome. There's a lot of people, and I mean, there's whole like networking and stuff that goes, just fake it till you make it. And I've often wondered with the imposter syndrome that this idea of just fake it, fake it, fake it till you make it, and all the bluffing and all that stuff isn't a big cause of that internal anxiety where people find themselves in roles that they're just not skilled for and they're not ready for, and they sort of get thrust into these situations and then they actually are the imposter. I know it's a bit controversial, but they actually are an imposter. And they so well, everyone, I think like how you've described it, everyone else has to lean in or around this imposter, that until they grow into the role or they're no longer an imposter. But I just wondered what you thought of that.
Well, the what is it, the Peter Principle, the promoter to
Yeah,
one
really
level
stupid
above,
people.
your words.
No, we're
But
being
I
recorded.
suppose, yeah, remember that. No, it's kind of what I was saying at the outset, though, about being conscious about what you're going to, that the fake it till you make it, what is make it for you, and what is important to you. Because again, we're so conditioned that hierarchy is important, that the next level up is important, that you must say yes because it's always a growth, a step up, a new title, a higher title, a more senior title. But I guess where I've come to over the years is that that's not what gets me out of bed, to use the cliche, but it's doing interesting work. And interesting work doesn't just exist at the highest level in an organization. And in fact, yeah, it can be the complete opposite.
Yeah, I
Because you're
agree.
just
Yeah.
you're wrapped in committees and yeah, spending your time reviewing papers.
And pontificating and coming up with crazy words to use in meetings just to make the day part go a bit quicker.
No, guilty of that as well. So no, it's finding, you're right. I think you do become the imposter if you are so blind, or if you choose to be blind to maybe what making it is, what that end goal is for you. And you don't have to know it in absolute terms, but at least understand, is it interesting work? Is it things that make you happy? Is it a balanced time between personal and work? Because everything is, these are all trade-offs, and there's the capability thing that will make you feel like an imposter, but the anxiety will also be driven if actually your happiness drivers, drivers of your happiness, whatever the correct way of phrasing that
Sorry.
is, if they're not aligned with what you've put yourself into, because you want the money or the prestige or the title.
My new thing is just have a good day at work, whatever that looks like. Have a good day at work, and that's why I do some of this stuff on top of a pretty hectic schedule. I think what we're doing, just adding little tidbits here and there, like just balanced, hopefully not too sanctimonious. It's the word of the day, but it just makes. Just gives you a chance to feel like you've had a good day at work. So, in whatever that is. All right. Well,
No, I agree. I agree.
that's our
I know.
time. That's our time. We have to go. All right.
Okay,
Thank you
well.
so much, Michael. As always, absolute pleasure talking to you. This time we recorded it, but we did spend half an hour just talking rubbish before we hit the record button. Thank you so much. And if you want to learn more, put his name into the internet and let it tell you all about Mr. Michael Johns. All right. Any final thoughts?
No, good
No.
luck. It's all.
All right. Have a good lunch with the guys. See you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.